From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Years ago, the New Hampshire legislature approved the creation of a new energy plan, a broad blueprint looking at energy's role in our economy, our environment, and the importance of a diverse energy supply. But so much has changed over the past decade that efforts are now underway to update the plan given today's energy realities. For example, 10 years ago, natural gas made up less than 1% of New Hampshire's energy mix. Now it accounts for almost 30% of our power. Another major change, coal and petroleum contribute less than they used to, each down from roughly 20% of our supply to about 12%. Meanwhile, the number of alternative energy projects proposed is on the rise. Wind power applications are debated more and more these days. And of course, there's the ongoing question over Hydro-Québec's Northern Pass project. All in all, many Granite Staters say it's time to re-examine the big picture when it comes to energy and come up with a consistent, stable policy that takes into account everything from cost and reliability to community impact and statewide need. Today in The Exchange, a makeover for New Hampshire's energy plan. As this process gets underway, we'll look at how it might unfold, where the road bumps might be, and let's hear from you. What should a new energy plan include, and what should it not include? What factors should it consider, and how should it weigh competing factors? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have four guests with us in studio. Kate Peters is here, Program Director for Better Buildings and H, which encourages more efficient buildings. She's also chair of the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Energy Board. And Kate Peters, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Mike Licata, Vice President of Public Policy at the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. And Mike Licata, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Jeb Bradley, Republican State Senator from Wolfboro, who has worked for many years on energy issues. And Senator Bradley, I know this is a busy time of year for the legislature. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Meredith Hatfield, Director of the State Office of Energy and Planning. And Meredith, thank you for coming in as well.
Good morning.
And Meredith, I want to start with you. What's the goal of an energy plan? Why do we do this?
Well, Laura, I think that there's really a growing sense that as New Hampshire looks at a variety of different energy projects, that we need to step back and look at the policies that we have in place, the laws that we have on the books, and try to figure out if they are pointing us in the right direction for the future.
What do you mean by pointing us in the right direction for the future?
Well, one example is the renewable portfolio standard legislation that we have, and the goal we have in New Hampshire to have 25% of our energy come from renewable sources by 2025. It might be time to check in on that goal. Should we be doing more, as some of the states around us are doing? I think that some of the renewable projects that have been proposed in the state have caused some people to say, you know, is that too fast? Is that too much? So that's an example of a law that I think we'll look at in the planning process.
So a lot going on in terms of energy. And a lot has changed, as I alluded to at the beginning. So it's time for an update.
Yes. As you said, the last energy plan was completed in 2002, and a lot has changed in the last it's been over 10 years now.
Senator Bradley, what's the legislature's goal and hopes for a new energy plan?
Well, Laura, energy in all its many sources is so dependent on jobs and the economy, how people live their lives, how they commute, how they work, how they live at home. And so, in my view, an energy plan has to look at price, reliability, availability of energy, diversity of energy resources, sort of moving away from some of the more polluting fuels to the cleaner fuels of the future, and doing it in a way that, you know, allows our economy to grow, protects jobs, and, you know, at the end of the day, high prices of energy are very difficult for New Hampshire citizens to endure. So, you know, an energy plan has to focus on those key criteria.
And as I understand, New Hampshire has the sixth highest energy cost or something like that in the nation.
We are among the highest cost energy states in the country. I'm sure that, you know, when Michael talks, he'll talk about the ability for New Hampshire with high energy prices to attract new jobs. And, you know, corporations that look at state like New Hampshire. We don't have an income tax. We don't have a sales tax. But we do have, you know, high energy costs. So there's always a balance there. And anything that we can do to diversify and lower the cost of energy is good. It's good for homeowners and taxpayers, and it's good for our economy.
Yeah, Mike, let's get you in on this. So what are the broad goals from the business perspective for an energy plan?
Well, we've heard for a number of years the desire among businesses for long-term strategic planning in the state. This has been a constant drumbeat that businesses feel on a whole host of issues, but in particular energy, that the state lacks strategic vision and a strategic direction. And so our hope is that we'll be able to bring stakeholders together, develop a plan, hear from a lot of different voices, and have a consistency of regulations that will enable businesses who want to invest in the state to come here, invest in alternative energy sources, invest in energy efficiency, while at the same time trying to keep costs low. As Senator Bradley said, we are an extremely high-cost state, which is really a challenge for businesses who are trying to grow here. It's a challenge to try and attract businesses. We're competing with our neighboring states in New England. We're competing with low-cost energy states down in the southern part of the country. So it's a big challenge, and it can be either an economic engine, an economic driver, or it can be a disincentive for businesses to grow and prosper here.
Which is the concern, that it's a disincentive at this point because it's so expensive. You know, I'm interested in what you said, Mike, about without this plan, we lack vision, we lack consistency in terms of energy policy. Can you just give us an example of what that means on the ground or what you see?
Sure. As Meredith mentioned, the Renewable Portfolio Standard, that was a piece of legislation that was put into effect to encourage the development of renewable energy sources in the state of New Hampshire. The goal is roughly 25% renewable by 2025. And we're now seeing sort of the fruits of that law come into being. We're seeing renewable developers come into the state, want to invest in the state, want to develop a number of projects, and yet now we're getting sort of the pushback from folks who don't want to see wind farms on ridgetops, who don't want to see large-scale transmission lines. And so, you end up having conflicting interests, which make it hard to keep on that course that we've set with the RPS. So as Meredith said, I think it's very appropriate, specifically with the RPS, but on a whole range of energy issues, to have a good look, bring everybody to the table, sit down and work out these issues so we can chart a long-term vision so we're not sort of fighting against each other, because the end result of that is increased electricity costs.
Well, and you do see a lot of these headlines around this. And, you know, it sounded great when we passed the Renewable Portfolio Standard. Hooray, renewable energy. But then when it gets down to the ground, you're right, Mike. Some people say, no, wait a minute, that's not what I was talking about. Kate Peters, I'd love to get your thoughts in here about your broad hopes for what an energy plan will mean for New Hampshire.
Sure, thank you. Well, I'm chair of the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Energy Board. We call it the EASY Board for short, EESE. So if I reference that, that's what I mean. And we've spent the last year actually reviewing, there was a comprehensive study of energy policy done in New Hampshire in 2011, and the EASY Board has just spent the past year reviewing those recommendations and making our own recommendations to the legislature. And the very first thing that we recommended the state needs is a clearly articulated comprehensive energy policy, because when you have an overarching policy that other programs and policies are working underneath, you can move forward in the state in a way where businesses know it's predictable, residents know it's predictable, they can make plans, they can decide where they want to invest. So having that overarching policy is really important in order to move forward on a whole host of energy issues.
Yeah, and how do you feel about what the other guests have said, especially Mike Licata kind of saying it's gotten kind of messy?
It is a little bit messy, and especially when you get down into the details of running programs, we have multiple different rebate programs in the state for energy efficiency. We have multiple different loan options, and it's confusing to consumers kind of on the ground level. So if we can take a step back as a state and look at what our overall policies are and then design our programs to implement those policies in kind of a streamlined way, I think it'll help everyone.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're looking at an updated energy plan for the Granite State. And as we're hearing, efforts are just getting underway once again to develop a statewide plan. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. What do you think this new energy plan should look like? What should it include? What should it not include? What should it focus on? How should it weigh competing interests that we've talked about? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So, Meredith Hatfield, here's a big question that I have. All right, so everybody's on board. We need a consistent plan. We need a predictable plan. We need a broad vision. Does this energy plan, once it's done, does it have any teeth? Can I say, you know, no, I reject your project, Meredith Hatfield, because it doesn't fit with the goals of the energy plan?
That's a great question, Laura, and it's actually something that the members of the legislature have been talking about. And I think the answer is no. I think it's more like a community's master plan. So it's kind of your vision of where you want to go in the future. But at the community level, when a developer proposes a specific project, they have to comply with the local codes and regulations and not necessarily the master plan itself. And I think the same will be true in this case. And as Kate was saying, this hopefully would be the sort of the umbrella of the vision for the future, the strategy. And then it will take work to implement it. We'll need to probably look at amending some of the laws that are on the books right now, looking at how state agencies are doing business around energy issues. There will be a lot of work that comes after this.
So if it doesn't have the power to say yay or nay to that wind farm or this natural gas plant, mm-hmm. what does it do?
Well, as Mike was saying, I mean, it brings people together, and I think one of the best values that it brings is education. I think it's really important for us all to understand how does energy work, what things does New Hampshire have control over, what issues require us to work at the federal level, at the regional level. And so I think bringing people together, talking about the issues and deciding, you know, within the space that New Hampshire has control, you know, what do we want to do?
Well, and energy being a regional product, and we'll talk about that later, and a national and international product, of course. We'll start taking your calls after a short break and a lot more questions for our panel. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And you can take NHPR with you wherever you go with the NHPR app, available for Apple and Android devices. It lets you stream NHPR in classical NH 24/7, download all of our podcasts, and receive news updates throughout the day. And it keeps you updated on all the discounts you're entitled to with your NHPR member card. Download the NHPR app today. More on an update energy plan for the Granite State on the exchange, then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, political influence and journalism. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from AARP, presenting You've Earned a Say, a community discussion on solutions to keep Social Security strong, inviting Granite Staters to join the conversation at aarp.org/nh. And the law firm of Donahue, Tucker & Chandela, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities, with offices in Exeter, Portsmouth, and Meredith. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, efforts to update the state's energy plan. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. As this process is just beginning, we want your thoughts. What should a new energy plan include? What shouldn't it include? What factors should it consider? And how should it weigh competing factors? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, Senator Bradley, I did want to ask you also what I asked Meredith Hatfield before the break. So this energy plan is a vision document. It can't say, yes, you can put this wind farm here. No, you can't build that coal plant there. So what good is it?
Well, it sets an overall blueprint of where the state wants to go in terms of, you know, jobs, price, availability, diversity, different resources. And I think a blueprint is good. But the subset, I think, that is so controversial today in New Hampshire are the siting requirements and how the site evaluation committee works.
So this is separate from the site evaluation committee, which does say yay or nay to alternative projects.
That's correct. And so a subset, I think, of the energy plan and how it's developed, whether it's through the energy plan or a different piece of legislation that's pending right now in the House, will be a pretty comprehensive look at some of the siting criteria. And quite frankly, New Hampshire, at least in my view, doesn't have a good set of siting criteria, which is why you see, you know, some of the disputes that you've seen, whether it's Northern Pass or wind projects, and people trying to protect their lives and their property values. This is a very important component of how we move forward with energy. And having siting guidelines, it really create a win-win so that we have the energy diversity and the low-cost resources that we need, but we don't destroy our state in the process. And you know, these are and as sort of a veteran of some of the energy wars over the years, I know exactly what that's all about, and you have to work together with people. And but at the same time, you got to have, you know, New Hampshire, people live here for a reason, because of our natural beauty and because we're, you know, a state that things can happen in economically. So we need to protect all of that.
Yeah. So that's where the rubber hits the road, right, Senator Bradley? I mean, it's great to say we need a blueprint, but there's the issue of cost and statewide need. There's the issue of local concerns, and people don't want, you know, the wind farm or the coal plant.
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of time talking to people, for instance, in the Newfound region around Newfound Lake, with three different proposed wind farms in that area, and then one that's already developed at the north end of the lake. And, you know, the impact will be profound on those people. Or I've spent a lot of time talking to folks that are either in very close proximity or relative proximity to the Northern Pass transmission line. And so, you know, trying to have access to these sources of power, but without destroying people's property values, that's pretty tough. And
yeah,
I think that's what we have to do, not only in the energy plan, but some of the siting legislation that we're working on now, so that people have the faith to know that they can develop on one hand, but property owners and businesses in those regions of the state also have the faith to know that they're just not going to be turned upside down by some of these proposals.
And two more questions, and then I do want to go to our listeners. So if you're on the line, stay there. The number 1-800-892-6477. And Mike Licata, to you, you talked earlier about how businesses really want consistency. They just want to know what the plan is so that they can move forward. But if this energy plan can be overruled, if I could put it that way, by the site evaluation committee or local zoning boards, is it really worth it?
I would say so. And I as Meredith and Senator Bradley talked about, the role of this plan is really to bring folks to the table to try and set a long-term vision, which will ultimately, hopefully, get implemented through legislation by the legislature. So the plan is sort of a stop on the way to implementation.
Ultimately,
we're developing policy goals and recommendations that the legislature will take and move forward. And a really important component of that is the buy-in of this plan and having stakeholders come to the table, feel like their voices are heard, feel like they have an opportunity to put their stamp or their imprint on the plan. And that can be difficult. And I know Meredith would be largely responsible for developing the plan, but you have a lot of different voices on energy, oftentimes conflicting, and that can be a real challenge in the development of the plan. But ultimately, that's just one part of the process. The next part is the implementation of the plan. And if I personally believe, the BIA believes, if you have a lot of people sitting around that table who feel like they have a stake in this plan, who feel like they have buy-in, they're going to be the ones to make that case before the legislature to show the value of this plan and move that forward at that point.
So the plan has a broad vision, but then there are parts of it, Mike, where you go to the legislature and say, hey, we want a law that enshrines this and makes this a fact on the ground, so to speak.
Exactly. Hopefully this plan would have a series of recommendations to implement the broad vision that the legislature would then look to pass as part of statute.
And Kata, another question for you. You know, we talk so much when we talk about an energy plan about supply, and of course wind power has come up, and nuclear and coal and Northern Pass and hydro and so forth. But some people say, look, efficiency is really the best alternative energy. I wonder if that sometimes gets kind of set aside because it's not as sexy as, you know, solar panels.
You know, it can, and we like to say that the cheapest energy is the energy that you don't buy. And there's a lot of opportunity in the state for us to reduce our energy use, you know, without doing things like shutting the lights off all day long. You know, there's a lot of opportunity in our buildings to seal them up, to insulate, to reduce our heating costs. A lot of the state still heats on oil, which is expensive. So the more we can reduce our energy use in ways that make sense in our buildings, we can, in some respects, think about that as almost a source of power because we're not using energy that we would have used otherwise. And it's a little bit complicated, I think, for people to think about it that way. So, you know, if we reduce our energy use, we're reducing our bills, we're reducing our costs, and we're also reducing the amount of energy we're going to need from some of these maybe more controversial sources.
Let's go to the phones again. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And Anna's been waiting in Peterborough. Hi, Anna. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Actually, that last speaker is addressing my point. You know, my first point was that the foundation of any energy plan should be efficiency. Every building in the state should be at the highest level of energy efficiency. There should be funding to retrofit every old building, and goodness knows New Hampshire has plenty of old buildings. All new buildings should be required to meet the highest energy efficiency standards. But then, you know, listening to the conversation, I'm realizing another thing. I think part of the problem with things like Northern Pass and these, you know, wind farms is just that they are so huge and they are so industrial. And I think that, you know, I mean, we're a state, we do small business. You know, we aren't so much into the really big things with the big impacts. And there's a lot more environmental impact to think about than just carbon footprint. I mean, Northern Pass, you know, is the industrial scale of the transmission towers, but there's also the part that we don't think about, and that's the environmental devastation in Canada from all the flooding of, you know,
to create
American
hydro. Yeah, Annie, yeah. Two points that I want to pick up on. So thanks for calling. And to you first, I think, Mike Licata, you know, talking about efficiency is the foundation of an energy supply. All new buildings should be required to be of the highest energy efficiency. Funding to retrofit old buildings should be available. What do you think of that?
Well, we're fully supportive of energy efficiency. A lot of our members utilize the utility-run core energy efficiency programs, which are been very successful at reducing energy consumption in the state. The issue, though, that I would want to highlight here is cost effectiveness and how much money are you putting into energy efficiency programs? How much are these subsidies that, quite frankly, other ratepayers are paying for if the government is helping to subsidize retrofitting or making a building more energy efficiency, that's coming out of someone else's pocket. So we want to make sure those are as cost effective as possible. And the other issue that we frequently see is that we build up these large sums of money coming from ratepayers, coming from taxpayers. And this time of year when the state is doing its budgeting, those can be very tempting to the legislature to look to fund other programs unrelated to energy efficiency.
Are you saying the legislature would raid Reggie funds?
other
funds?
I could imagine something like that happening.
and that's a good point. I'm glad you raised that. Real quickly, Kate, to you, I think, first, but Meredith, if you want to jump in. So who does pay for energy efficiency? You know, you said, Anna said, every building should be super efficient, and that's great, but who pays for it?
Yeah, well, right now in the state, we have kind of a number of programs. There are state programs funded by RGGI funds, funded by the core utilities. There's some federal funds that have been in the state. But people are also investing their own money. And one of the things a lot of us have been working on is financing programs to help get good loan options for people. These projects economically make a lot of sense most of the time. You have to look at them individually, obviously, and you want to make choices about what you're going to implement and how much it costs and what the payback is. But the more we do these projects, the more we realize that the investment is worth it. It just depends on what the term of the loan is and how long the payback is. And so I think we can take some of these state programs that Mike mentioned that have been very successful. And as the market grows, maybe some of those rebates can drop back and people will be making these investments on their own. But we're kind of in a mixed phase right now with the
funding. Right. And another reason for the energy plan to add some clarity to that. Go ahead, Meredith.
Well, and the other issue is that it's important for people to understand just how expensive those few power plants are that we need on those hottest days in the summer. And if we could figure out a way to transfer that money to be invested on the ground in New Hampshire in small scale sources like renewable energy or in energy efficiency, you know, those are dollars in our pocket in our state.
Well, and I want to return to your point a little bit later about micro versus macro, because that's real interesting. And some people are saying, let's move more towards the smaller energy facilities. But let's bring some other voices into our conversation now. Doug's waiting in Barrington. Hi, Doug, you're on the air. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Hi, everybody. I think after, you know, we do all the low-hanging fruit, the energy efficiency and existing projects and so forth, and stopping the Northern Pass, we really got to be looking at new capacity to replace the unsustainable sources like coal and nuclear and even gas in the long run. And to me, it looks like we really have to be going offshore. Our neighboring states, north and south, are planning to have thousands of megawatts of offshore wind developed in the next 10 years, 10 or 15 years. And I'm wondering whether New Hampshire has any plan or any thoughts of moving forward there. It seems that that's the new frontier as far as, you know, significant sources of renewable power.
Okay, Doug, thanks a lot for calling in. 2 points he raises. First to you, Senator Bradley. Offshore wind, that's been happening in Massachusetts and elsewhere. I wonder what the potential is for New Hampshire.
Well, we have a very small coastline, 18 miles, so I think just in and of itself, that tends to somewhat limit the opportunities for offshore wind in New Hampshire. I think, you know, all of us should look at Cape Wind when and if it finally ever gets built.
How long have they been talking about that?
For years. And this is something, you know, Cape Wind, the visibility of those from the shoreline is almost going to be negligible. But it has certainly run afoul of the permitting process, both federally and state of Massachusetts. So I don't think offshore wind at this point is a panacea. And I think it gets back to, you know, what Kate was saying and others. A wise energy policy is based on diversity. And it's, you know, like the old saying, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. And so we need an all-of-the-above strategy that focuses on energy efficiency, that focuses on producing renewable energy. And yes, we need some of the conventional energy sources too, because what happens when you don't have enough energy and you don't have the diversity of energy is that you can have the kind of price spikes that we saw in New England this winter, with a possibility of blackouts because we're too dependent on natural gas. And it's not just there's plenty of natural gas in the United States, but we have pipeline constraints getting here. So a wise energy plan has to focus on sort of all of the above. I know that's the code word coming out of Washington for energy, but it's very true. And that means energy efficiency. It means renewables. And all down the line.
Well, and some people have said recently that we're focusing too much now on natural gas. We have too many natural gas eggs in that basket.
And I think we probably do, which is, you know, what the proponents of Northern Pass would argue, that we need more hydro. And you know what? We probably do, but it can't be at the expense of, you know, all the people with their property and their property values and their lives without at least a pretty thorough consideration of burying some of these lines in key places, a lot of key places. And I think that, you know, that's how you get to a win-win.
Well, and real quick, we've had two callers now, Anna and Doug. And Doug said, when we stop Northern Pass. Now, Meredith, it's just a point of fact. I know you're not going to come out and say yes or no to Northern Pass, but we're not done with this. I mean, this could happen, this might not happen. We don't know what's going to happen with Northern Pass.
And yeah, I think it's fair to say that we're before the beginning. You know, the project certainly has been proposed in the public, but as far as I know, they haven't actually taken any regulatory steps to seek approvals other than the presidential permit at the federal level. So it's a long-term process.
And Mike, I know your organization, the BIA, is not taking an official position on Northern Pass, but can you just give us a sense of how businesses are viewing this giant debate about this right now?
Sure, sure. And I'm glad Meredith mentioned it's on Northern Pass. It's sort of before the beginning. For us, as you said, we don't have a position on Northern Pass. And part of the reason because of that is there hasn't been an application before the Site Evaluation Committee. There is no...
We're not even there yet.
We're not even there yet, exactly. So it's virtually impossible for us to evaluate a project like that and determine whether it's in the best interest of the business community or not. Although I would say, you know, and one of the issues that I've testified to before the legislature is this feeling of constantly changing regulation to prevent a specific project. If we want to have a discussion about the Site Evaluation Committee and the criteria for siting in the state, we should have that discussion. I'm sure we can improve the process. I'm sure we can always do it better, except we don't want to tailor criteria on a statewide level to prevent one specific project from going forward. That's bad public policy, has negative impacts, long-term, unforeseeable at this point. And so that's always been our opposition to bills that you see come forward and they're looking to reform the Site Evaluation Committee process or they're looking to change some rule or regulation, except if they're so narrowly tailored just to prevent a wind farm or prevent a large transmission line coming in from Canada, then that really has some long-term negative impacts to the state. And it also chills investment in the state. If I'm a developer who's looking to invest in New Hampshire and I want to spend millions upon millions of dollars, it doesn't even have to be an energy project, I'm going to hesitate if I know that someone who might be upset about visual impact or some other aspect of my project is going to go to the legislature and I could be out all of that investment and have nothing to show for it. So that goes back to the consistency of regulation, consistency of rules, not swaying in the wind, not constantly chasing the next project, trying to prevent something from going forward, but having a strong set of guidelines in place that businesses, residents, the government can rely on and move us forward.
All right. So that turmoil, that uncertainty makes businesses uncertain about investing in New Hampshire.
Correct.
We will take more of your calls after a short break. Thank you for that one, Doug. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, offering tune-ups, repairs, and efficient air conditioning systems, including ductless AC for homes without ductwork. Online at justcallheritage.com. Empanema Green Family Golf Center in Amherst, providing families with outdoor fun, including golf, mini golf, lessons, driving range, and food. Details at playamherst.com. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, books behind bars. Undergrads and inmates from a juvenile correction facility read Russian Lit side by side. We'll talk to the scholar behind a revolutionary course that has prisoners clamoring to read Tolstoy. Plus, a subway musician asks commuters to share their inspiration. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth discovers the passion in passersby. Today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, why different hospitals, even within the same city, charge hugely different amounts for the same procedure. Email us before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about new efforts to update the statewide energy plan, where some of the challenges might come up, why we need a new energy plan. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Here's an email that came in before the show from Walter in Londonderry. And Kate, this is for you. He says, I think New Hampshire's largest issue with energy is we rely so much on heating oil, propane, and natural gas. All these fuels come from out of state, and most of the money we spend on them leaves the state. I think our energy plan should have a goal of reducing our reliance on these fuels, achieved by implementing building codes and creating incentives that would increase insulation, air tightness, maximize passive and active solar heating, and he says make wood pellets the most economic home heating fuel. Again, your main issue, Kate, is energy efficiency. We talked about this a little bit before, but how do you do this? Again, everybody wants to be more efficient, but it's hard to get from A to B sometimes.
It is hard. And he mentioned building codes in the email, which is interesting. There's actually an energy building code review committee at the moment, and they're looking at our building codes. Our codes actually have pretty good standards for energy efficiency, but they're not always implemented the same way across the state. And so they're working on some education that can be done, trying to make sure we are building at least up to code. We should be doing better when we can. But that's an important piece of it when we're building new buildings. And then when we're looking at our old buildings, a lot of times it's when folks need to make another repair or the furnace, you know, dies and they need to do a replacement. And those are really good opportunities to look at the efficiency of the entire building. If you're going to do a project, you can try to do all of it at once. It'll have some economy of scale there. And as we go and people learn more about this and how it can be done and can take advantage of some of the programs in the state, like the utility programs that Mike mentioned, we can just start going through those buildings one by one. Unfortunately, it's a very individualized process, and every building is different. And so people who own those buildings need to make individual decisions about what they're going to do.
Meredith, is it possible that the building codes for new buildings, again, older buildings, it's another story, is it possible that those codes get too tight? We hear some states, California's often mentioned, that there are so many rules and regulations that it's just a disincentive for anybody to do anything.
I know that in New Hampshire there have been concerns about that in the past, but I think that a very broad group of people worked on New Hampshire's energy code. And I think, as Kate said, the real issue is helping people comply with the code. And across the state, depending on where you live, the implementation could be very different.
All right, let's take some more calls. Lots of people who want to jump in on our conversation. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And from Concord, Walter's on the phone. Hi, Walter. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you very much. Great to be on.
Go ahead, Walter.
I want to tell you about a technology that I have been reading about that solves some of these major problems. One is environmental. If you use it, you don't have power lines strung from Canada to Massachusetts. Modular nuclear power plants. They don't provide the same amount of power that Seabrook does. They maybe one-fifth as much. So for, let's say, the city of Concord, you'd need one or maybe two of them. But the thing is, you put them... They're manufactured, hauled over the road, embedded into the ground. They don't use high-pressure steam, so there's no chance of it going kaboom and with steam buildup. They use a molten salt.
Walter, without going into too much detail about the technology, I'm interested in something you said, modular. Does that mean they move around, or you move them to one place and then they stay there?
They're manufactured. They come over the road. They're hauled over the road and embedded into the ground.
Okay, so they're not built on site. You know, this is real interesting. I hadn't heard about this. Do you want to jump in on that, Senator Bradley? And then just more broadly, nuclear power and where that might fit into the energy mix. Go ahead.
Well, I think the caller is talking about a technology called pebble bed nuclear technology. It's graphite encased, and he's correct. Traditional nuclear technology uses steams, and you have the possibility of corrosion and then all the problems of a nuclear release. This graphite technology is a little different. Been developed in South Africa, but it hasn't really, to the best of my knowledge, spread beyond South Africa. The siting, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, of any technology is always very difficult. And whether it's nuclear, I mean, we remember the debate about Seabrook, you know, whether it's transmission lines, as we're debating now in the northern part of New Hampshire, going back to the oil refinery that was proposed by Mr. Onassis in the 1970s, or even there was a caller from Londonderry, the Londonderry gas plant, which everybody sort of takes for granted now, was tremendously controversial 10 or 12 years ago when it was proposed. So, you know, these are where the siting discussion that we're going to have in the legislature and through this energy plan is going to be key for the future of the state in many different ways.
Because, as you said, you know, that's where things sometimes get difficult, is where you put these things. So are you saying, Senator Bradley, that right now the legislature is working on improving the site evaluation process?
Well, there are two bills, Laura. One is the energy plan. It's Bob O'Dell's bill, Senate Bill 191. Jeanne Forrester has a bill, Senate Bill 99, which deals much more specifically with siting. And I think at the end of the day, and I'm hopeful that this will happen, is that the legislature is going to task Meredith, who's doing a good job at the governor's energy office, with, you know, this broader blueprint, the energy plan. But then as a subset of that, citing criteria for whether it's new generation facilities, transmission facilities, wind energy, that type of thing, so that there's some sense by the public that the process can be trusted, and that the aesthetic values, their property values, all of the things that we altogether too often take for granted in New Hampshire, that we are going to protect those at a time that we also develop energy resources.
Let's take another call. Thanks for that one, Walter. Rodney's waiting in Northwood. Hi, Rodney. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about hydroelectric energy. For years, I've been watching rivers up here, and there's a huge amount of energy in these rivers. And there are dams already on the rivers, and there are generators on the rivers, and they don't run these things. And I just don't understand why they're not running them, whether the power companies have got these tied up or how they're actually, you know, not using these. You know, it's crazy to watch these things. In Pittsfield, which is the next town over from me, they've got some beautiful generators over there, and they can't use them.
You know, there's a lot of Rodney, thanks for calling, and Meredith, correct me if I'm wrong, but New Hampshire used to use a lot of hydropower. That's why you see all these old dams and so forth. But he's right. Most of them aren't used now.
That is true, Laura. And in the Renewable Portfolio Standard Law, the legislature was very careful to include existing small hydro as a resource that qualifies for renewable energy credits, I think as a way to ensure that the ones that we do have stay in place, those small, sort of the micro-scale hydro plants.
Although it's controversial, because if you build a dam, then fish can't migrate, and you're kind of interrupting the flow there, the balance of the natural water flow.
It can be, and also it can be expensive for the very smallest hydroelectric dams to be able to comply with different regulations.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Rodney. And just to let you know, 10 years ago, Rodney, in 2000, so 13 years ago, hydro was 15.5% of New Hampshire's energy supply. Today, it's 11.7%. That's from the Energy Information Administration. So you're right, Rodney, it has gone down. Thanks for joining us. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's something from Fred in Canterbury, who says, carbon from fossil fuels, spent nuclear fuel, and large-scale hydro environmental destruction should all be included in the cost effectiveness, he puts in quotes, calculation. This is a big deal, folks, and we could spend a whole hour on this. So, Fred, thanks for raising it. Senator Bradley has talked about this. Mike Licata, I wonder your thoughts, too. You know, energy has an impact on the environment. Yes, we need it to power our economy, but it can hurt our beautiful natural environment as well. I wonder how you work with that balance.
Oh, without a doubt, there can be an environmental impact from energy projects. And as Senator Bradley said, you know, you have to look at sort of I hate to use sort of the Washington catchphrase here, but the all of the above strategy. We touched on nuclear earlier. We've touched on wind. We've touched a little bit on natural gas. But you need a broad array of technologies to help support our desire and our need for electricity. Unfortunately, right now as it stands, you can't get there through efficiency alone. You need low-cost energy resources. You need diverse energy resources. You're looking at other states in the area that we're competing with for businesses, Connecticut and Maine in particular. We're looking to take advantage of increased natural gas supply. As Senator Bradley mentioned earlier, we have seen some issues with transmission of natural gas into the region, and that ends up being a little bit of a chicken and an egg problem where you have this desire for natural gas, but you don't have the transmission, but the transmission won't come until you start using more natural gas. So it can be a bit of a conundrum, but you're looking at other states trying to develop their infrastructure, their sort of local distribution infrastructure of natural gas to try and tap that really new resource that we're seeing for natural gas coming out of New York and Pennsylvania and trying to reduce their costs in a way to, one, help their residents, of course, with their heating costs, but two, also attract businesses. Again, we're competing with New England states. We're competing with states down south for new business and for existing business. And so it's really important that we try to reduce our electricity costs as best possible, while, of course, retaining our natural beauty that we have here in New Hampshire and quality of life.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough, Meredith, for you. As I understand, you're really going to be taking charge of this energy plan, being sensitive to the cost issues and competitive issues that Mike raises, but the clear importance of protecting the natural environment that our emailer Fred raises. Thanks, Fred.
And
how are you going to do that? It's just I know you can't answer that right
now.
But yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think we do want to have it all, and I don't think we should give up on that. And I think it's interesting right now that we're seeing in the New England electric market that the market forces and environmental regulations are really converging to make natural gas the most popular fuel. It is cleaner than the other fossil fuels, and we see the coal plants in the region running less and less. So it is interesting that the regulations that are trying to drive a cleaner environment are combining with cost issues, and those sources are becoming less popular.
Although I have heard that the boom in natural gas, and as I said at the beginning of the show, 0.7% of New Hampshire's power supply in 2000, 29% today. So that's a giant change in just over a decade. I have heard some people say, Meredith, that the natural gas boom has meant that other sources like solar or wind or biomass have kind of gotten ignored. It's just, let's all go to natural gas.
Senator Bradley talked about natural gas a bit earlier, and I think there really is a risk of everyone getting on the natural gas bandwagon, whether it be for the production of electricity or for heating homes. I mean, very few people in New Hampshire have access to gas right now for their homes, and many people would like it. But I think there really is a risk of over-relying on natural gas. And I think also the cost issue. When electricity is cheap, that's good for a lot of reasons, but it can hurt some of the newer technologies that are trying to enter the market.
Or some of the efficiency projects that Kate is working on. Let's take one more call, and this is Mike in Concord. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is I'd like to say, first of all the above strategy, I think, is a really great strategy, and we have to look at that moving forward. My thing is carbon dioxide emissions. Reducing the carbon dioxide emissions. I know it may not be the greatest buzz phrase now, climate change and the rest, and we're looking at trying to promote the fact that we're people coming on board with the pollution that we're causing for the atmosphere to do something different, and I think that's why we're all talking about this. I happen to be the managing member of Sunray Solar right in Concord, and we work with distributed generation solar. As a matter of fact, I'm on my way to Massachusetts right now to close a deal, which I thought it was kind of great that you guys were, I was hearing you and I called in, because I'm driving to Massachusetts because the investment in solar is better just across our border. We do have some bills that are right now being looked at in the House and the Senate, and I can't remember the bill numbers exactly, but one is to basically increase the amount of incentives for microgeneration, distributed generation.
Okay, and Mike, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's a great point. We're running close to the end of the hour, so I did want to get Kate Peters to talk about what you mentioned. Go ahead, Kate.
Sure. I think I hear that a lot from businesses, especially on the solar front, that in Massachusetts, they both have a more predictable rebate system and probably richer rebates than we have here in New Hampshire.
But as Mike pointed out earlier, somebody pays for those rebates, usually taxpayers.
Exactly. So that's a decision that, that the government in Massachusetts has made in terms of how they want to invest some of their funds to those programs. And I think, you know, having this idea of an energy plan and an overall state policy, going back to that and some of the bills that are in the legislature, if what we decide here in the state is that we want to have more solar, and it sounds like a diverse set of resources is important to us, we've been talking to that, we need to make that decision, and then we need to decide what policies we put in place that will make it happen. And that can include rebate programs, it can include education, it can include a lot of different things. So there's this planning process, and then there's figuring out what do we put in place to make the plan actually happen in the state.
Yeah, and we're very early in this process, as we've said. Meredith Hatfield, real quickly, so where are we at with this? What's the next big step for this energy plan?
So actually today, Laura, the House Science, Technology, and Energy Committee is voting the bill out of committee this afternoon, and then it goes back to the Senate to see if they'll agree with the language. And if it all moves forward, we will start the process this summer.
And a separate process, Senator Bradley, is this, again, concerns about the Site Evaluation Committee. Where is that at?
Again, the House committee should be voting that out today, and I think that the amendment that they'll consider from Senator Forrester is a step in the right direction. So it's certainly my hope that we're able to wrap this up and give both the predictability that we need, but also the assurances for people throughout the state that their lives and their property is going to be protected.
All right. All of you, real interesting stuff. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.